the United States versus Guzman Vargas.
May it please the court, counsel of the government. Your Honor, the only issue before this court is whether Mr. Guzman Vargas qualifies for the safety valve provision under U.S. United States Sentencing Guideline Section 5C1.2 and 18 U.S.C. 3553. There's no question that he...
Can you tell us why?
Well, he proffered to the government the name of the source, the whereabouts of the source, where to find the source, potential phone numbers of the source, and the only question is whether or not he truthfully and completely proffered to the government his involvement in the offense or similar the course of conduct. And, Your Honor, I submit to you that the fact that he denied that he had dealt with the source on prior occasions is insufficient to say that he does not qualify. There is not a case that I've found in this country, Your Honor.
Mr. Tunick, isn't this basically simply a matter of credibility? The district court heard his view, the defendant's view of this thing, and said, look, that's not the way it went down. I just don't believe you. I mean, that's really an incredibility issue we can't really touch, right?
Well, I submit to you that that's incorrect, Your Honors, because there's no evidence that information even would have been relevant to a similar course of conduct or common scheme or plan. I mean, to say that he maybe had dealt with him on a prior occasion, maybe 10 years ago or 5 years ago in a different Mexico or a similar location, you just can't say that because he denied that he had dealt with him on a prior occasion, that it's even relevant to a similar course of conduct or common scheme or plan. And I submit to you that the Seventh Circuit, every case cited by the government, does not deal with situations akin to Mr. Guzman Vargas. Every case, United States versus Galbraith, were statements to law enforcement after a post-arrest statement, after his home was searched. There was no proffer to the government. United States versus Arrington, in Arrington, the defendant failed to even name the source of the...
Why didn't he answer how many times he had dealt with him before?
Well, he did answer, Your Honor, and he said he hadn't. He hadn't dealt with this particular source on a prior occasion. And that's very conceivable. Maybe he had... had not dealt with the source on a prior occasion. And
in other words, he met this man and that this was the only time that he had dealt with him?
Well, it's conceivable. And
he gave him $40,000 worth of cocaine, someone he hadn't dealt with before?
Well, as he
indicated... You know, judges don't live in a dream world.
As he indicated to the government, and I indicated to the court, that he knew this gentleman back from childhood. And it maybe it's very conceivable.
So he trusts him with $40,000 worth of cocaine.
It was a very organized deal, Your Honor. He submitted that the source was supposed to meet him very shortly after the deal, and the phone records bore that out, that he was supposed to meet the source right after the deal to get the money. I mean, it wasn't that the source wasn't concerned with the money. Obviously, he was. It was a very monitored transaction. He was to receive the money shortly after the transaction occurred. And, Your Honors, I submit to you that all he did provide, this has turned into a substantial assistance requirement, that he provided substantial information. He doesn't have to provide all information that's conceivable. I've been in proffer sessions where the government has asked a defendant where, regarding phone numbers that were in his wallet when he was arrested back in Colombia. The information that was provided to the government was complete, it was truthful. All the cases cited do not deal with these particular proffers where he provides source information, locations.
But as Judge Ripple, aren't we just down to whether or not the judge believed?
Well, again, I submit to you that there's no evidence that this was even related to a similar course of conduct or common scheme or plan. To say that it's a leap of faith to say that just because the value of the cocaine was substantial, that he hadn't dealt with him before.
I know, but again, the judge is making that decision, and that's part of the process of credibility. If he didn't believe him, he didn't believe him.
But there was no evidence to say that the information was incomplete. All the other information he provided was complete, was truthful. There was no evidence that
all of the other, but this part wasn't.
I submit to you, Your Honor, there was just, it's a leap of faith to say that he did not provide truthful information. He might have been dealing drugs with other people, and that the trust developed from that that relationship. But to say that just because the amount of the cocaine was $40,000...
And how long he had been dealing with it before, so that they could get to the bottom of this whole procedure and this whole drug-selling scheme.
I think he indicated, again, that the reasons why the trust developed and how closely this drug transaction was monitored. Your Honor, if I might just save a couple minutes for rebuttal, I would ask that.
Fine. Thank you.
All right, counsel.
May it please the Court. Carrie Hamilton on behalf of the United States. This Court, consistent with other circuits, has held that the government bears no burden to present any evidence to rebut a defendant's story that he presents in a safety valve proffer. The onus is on the defendant to prove his entitlement to the safety valve by preponderance of the evidence. And this is the only rule that makes sense. Otherwise, the defendant could come forward to the government, tell the government any story that he wants, and unless the government can present some independent evidence to rebut this story, the court's hands would be tied and the court would be in a position of saying,
Ms. Hamilton, is the burden of proof really at stake here? I mean, if the district court just said, to the defendant, I don't believe you, I mean, isn't that kind of the end of the case? I mean, do we really have to get involved in this discussion of burdens of proof?
I raise it only because in the brief, defense counsel did raise the argument that the district court clearly erred by not finding that the burden had been met. I agree, Your Honor, that at the end of the day, this is the district court's determination that the story just wasn't credible, that based upon his experience and in light of the circumstances underlying this case, it just wasn't believable that this was the first time the defendant had ever dealt with the supplier.
And Ms. Hamilton, could you speak for a moment directly to your colleague's point, though, that there really isn't any showing that any prior dealings had to do with the same course or of conduct or common scheme or plan as required by 5C1.2, parent 5.
You mean?
In other words, there's never any showing that even if he had dealt with this fellow earlier, that it had been part of the same common scheme or plan.
Well,
he could have dealt with this fellow, I believe you said, 10 years ago in Mexico. And that wouldn't have been part of the same common scheme or plan.
But, Your Honor, there was absolutely no evidence to that. The defendant was asked if he had ever dealt with a supplier before. And it's the government's recollection from the safety valve proffer that defense counsel objected to that question and it was never answered. But then in subsequent communications, defense counsel relayed to the government that if asked that question, the defendant would say no, he'd never dealt with a supplier before. There were no limitations placed on that question. The answer was, well, are you talking about now or are you talking about the past 10 years? Are you talking the United States or Mexico? The question wasn't answered, and there were no limitations placed on that question. So in that sense, there was no evidence presented that there was any other relationship that would present a relationship of trust such that it was believable this was the first time these two had dealt together. Based upon these circumstances, the district court's finding was entirely reasonable. Unless there are any further questions, the government would ask that the court affirm the defendant's sentence.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, briefly, I just submit that the Seventh Circuit hasn't dealt with a situation like this. There is every case that the Seventh Circuit has issued an opinion about the safety valve deals with situations where defendants have made statements in post-arrest statements, such as United States v. Pedro Ramirez. It was a post-arrest statement. It was the defendant in that case did not give information regarding a co-defendant. He refused invitations to meet with the government. United States v. Galbraith, again, it was a statement to law enforcement after a post-arrest. United States v. Arrington, there wasn't even a stipulation as to the facts in that case. The fact that Mr. Guzman Vargas may have denied contact with this source that is unrelated to the similar course of conduct or common scheme or plan is very important for this court because it's a materiality issue. If he didn't deny dealing with him 10 years ago, it's irrelevant to this analysis, whether he qualifies for the safety valve. I ask this court to hold consistent with other courts where they've given the safety valve, even where a defendant has testified at trial that he didn't even know he was carrying drugs and then later submitted to the safety valve. He made a good faith effort to comply. He provided substantial information to the government that was corroborated by their own evidence that they developed in this investigation. If he denied his contact with the source on a prior occasion, then without any evidence, I ask this court to submit it back to the district court for reevaluation whether there's any evidence that Mr. Guzman Vargas was not telling the truth in that proffer. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and proceed.